being here, and let's get started. So I'd like to go ahead and call the Application Review Committee to order. It's February 7, 2023. The time is 7:35. Miss Folks, could you do the roll call, please?
Yes, Madam Chair. Dr. Malott?
Yeah.
Dr. Stewart?
Present.
You have a quorum.
Thank you. We don't have any minutes to approve. We will move into the application. Dr. Stewart, the way I do it, as you probably recall, is we'll go back and forth. Sometimes I'll just group a bunch of applicants together, especially like universal recognition, and kind of get them done in one, single. We do have somebody who's joined us, and maybe do you recognize who they are, Ms. Folks?
No, ma'am.
Okay. We'll wait for them to identify. Our first applicant is...
Hey, good morning. This is Dr. McConnell. I'm just listening in.
Dr. Who?
McConnell.
MCC. Oh, yep. Mm-hmm. Good morning.
But Madam Chair, that's item F2.
Should we jump to that? I'm so sorry. F2. Can you? Oh, okay. Okay. Dr. McConnell, your application is one of the easiest ones to review because you're an ABET, and congratulations on that. We can go ahead and do this category. I'll go ahead and do both of them. We have two candidates in this category. We have Shelley Leininger and Bradley James McConnell. Both of them are applying under the credential. Under the credential for ABEP, we basically accept their credentials and the fact that they, they have a clean history and no other issues. They've got the right degree, etc. Did you have any problems with the application or any questions either also? Sorry, I jumped. So.
I have no questions.
Okay, so I'll go ahead and make a motion that we move these two applicants to the full board for approval for licensure in Arizona. Do I hear a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion is approved. Dr. McConnell, your application is good. It will be on the consent agenda on Friday, and after which we get full board approval, you will hear from staff. So. Okay, let's move to item number 3A1. We have one candidate, and I'll go ahead and do that one, Diana Chadis. Her application is just a request to sit for the exam. She graduated from an APA-approved program, Adler University. She's completed her internship, which is APA-APIC, at Southwest Behavioral Health. All she's asking for is to go ahead and sit for the exam. Her references were in order. I didn't see any problems. Hearing no questions, I will go ahead and make a motion that we move her to the full board for approval to sit for the exam. Do I hear a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion approved. We will now move to our 3B. 3B is not only a request to sit for the exam, but also grant them licensure upon passing. So, the first one, and I'll do this one, and then I'll let you do the next one, is Dr. Pearl Carter Alexander Pearl. This is a reapplication. So generally in a reapplication, you know, the board has reviewed this application. They have approved it to sit for the exams. And then if a person does not pass, they have to do a kind of a mini application or the reapplication. It depends on the timing. And if it's within a certain time frame, then the materials that they submit vary. Generally, it's recommendation letters because they expire after a certain time frame. So in the case of Dr. Pearl, they passed part one. They have not passed part two, and they are applying to rehab. So we don't go into details because this has already been reviewed, unless you see something that you had a question on. Okay. Do you want to do Catherine Stoll? This one's a little more complicated, but I'll go ahead and let you take a, take a go at it. So.
Catherine Stoll is applying for to sit for EPPP parts one and two. And in looking through, she was a certified school psychologist and licensed under the National Association of School Psychologists as well, has a doctoral degree from the University of Arizona, and internships at Hawaii and pre-internship at University of Arizona. I didn't see anything in that would prevent her from sitting for the exams. Did you, Dr. Malott?
Yeah, so
what did
4-8, one second, I'm just checking her hours again. So the biggest challenge with Dr. Stoll's application, and I am glad Ms. Galvin is here, because so she did her internship for 2,000 hours, and then she submitted her pre-doc hours, and her pre-doc hours are 1,147. So I always check those to make sure they are proportionately okay. So you need 25%, and you can combine the hours, and you need at least 25% direct, 1 hour of supervision for every 10. It can be group, you know, half of it can be group and half of it can be individual, though it can all be individual, but it cannot all be group, you know. So in her case, in her first one, she had 225. Her direct should be about 50, so that's fine. Her supervision is fine. Her second one is 497. She needs about 125, but as I said, we combine the two, so I think she's okay. And then she we combine the three, so I see 225, 497, and I thought it's, oh, and 425. So her pre-internship hours do meet the requirement. Her biggest challenge, and I think, and maybe Ms. Folks can give us an update, her references. One reference is a licensed doctoral psychologist, but her second list reference is a master's. Now, we have accepted certified doctoral school psychologists, but I don't think we've ever accepted a master's. Mm-hmm. And Ms. Folks, do you have an update on this? Seems like it was a problem brought up before, if I was reading through, or is this the first time we are seeing this?
The question that came up, Madam Chair, that I remember was, I don't recall the fact that she's a master's degree only at all, just that it was a school psychologist and not a licensed psychologist.
Yeah, and I, you know, we have seen doctoral level, but they've all been at the doctoral level and not a master's levels, you know. So, Ms. Galvin, do you recall?
I don't recall this set of circumstances, but it seems that the statute requires at least two psychologists.
At least one. That are licensed or certified.
Right.
And you've you've given the legal advice that if they're certified by the Arizona Department of Education as a school psychologist, when the applicant is a school psychologist, they can serve as a reference. I don't believe there's ever been mention before of the degree the person holds.
Yeah. And I also remember that, but I've never seen a master's level. That's where I was struggling
Is the master's level from another jurisdiction that accepts master level psychologists?
Our jurisdiction accepts master's level. It's Arizona Department of Education.
No.
We don't. No.
No. Some, I think, provinces in Canada, and is it maybe Michigan, accepts a master's level for a psychologist and not a school psychologist.
Okay. I was thinking just the school psychology.
Yeah, 17 U.S. jurisdictions will license at the master's level with a, you know, specific scope that is not as broad as psychologists educated at the doctoral level.
What would she need to do? Would she need to simply get another letter of reference from a licensed psychologist, or what does she need to do?
That's what they need to do, you know. And I guess that's where I'm struggling with. I'm struggling with the master's level, you know. I know we have accepted school psychologists that have been certified, but they've all been at the doctoral level. I have not seen a master's level, though we have nowhere in our statutes that state doctoral, you know.
But this is just, am I correct that this is for a reference?
Yes. So if you think that's okay, then her application is good, you know. But, and we did, yeah, I do know we reached out to her before because she did include evidence in her letter. We asked her, she was using psychologist as a term on a website. We noticed that. So we asked her to correct that. We asked her to verify what was she doing and was it within her scope, because she was working for an agency outside of the school, providing services to school. So she clarified that. So I know I've been in communication with her before. So because I saw all of that correspondence in the file. So I guess here's my question. Since we have accepted licensees, references that have been certified school psychologists, you know, they've been at the doctoral level from everything I recall. But if there's nothing specified that it has to be doctoral.
Are we setting a precedent by accepting the reference from a non-doctoral level school psychologist? Is what long term do we expect trouble around this, if anything?
Well, you are setting precedent. I'm just trying to look in the code. I'm not aware. Double checking rules to where it talks about references. I don't know that it specifically states that they have to be at the doctoral level.
Madam Chair, committee members, Jean, I've read that many times. It does not specify doctoral. It specifies licensed or certified psychologist.
I mean, it is a reference, and
Kathy, can you point me to that reference? Is it statute or rule?
It's a rule, and it's 203. It's under the application that must be submitted. I think it's section C. 5, maybe. I'd have to pull it up to be sure.
Hang on. So an attestation from the supervisor or a psychologist.
B5. Subsection B5.
Two individuals are. Two individuals to serve as a reference to one are psychologists licensed or certified to practice who are not members of the board, and two are familiar with applicants' work in the field or in a postdoctoral program with immediately 3 years. So they have to be all of those things. They have to be psychologists who are licensed or certified to practice, familiar with the work, and recommend. So it does not appear that you could accept a master's level if they're not from one of those jurisdictions that accept master's levels and who are psychologists. So you would have to ask her to obtain a new reference.
So are you, Madam Chair, committee members, sorry, Jean, are you, in the past, you've interpreted psychologist licensed or certified to practice psychology in the U.S. or Canadian regulatory jurisdiction as that a school psychologist certified by the Arizona Department of Education was acceptable. And if we, I'm not disagreeing with you because I would like to see a doctoral level as well, but it will change. You're setting precedent by changing the interpretation, I think. Would that be correct?
No, because this individual is not a school psychologist is certified to practice psychology in the school setting. This individual who has this reference from a master's level individual, it's not in the school setting.
She does list a.
Oh, you're right, because it's an outside setting too. This is the owner of the agency who's providing supervision, and she clarified that she does go into the schools to. Yeah, it is complicated. I mean, it's master's level, it's an agency outside. We don't know whether the supervisor, so if you take all, we don't know if the supervisor is an active school psychologist in that school. You know what I mean?
Refresh my memory, Dr. Malott, perhaps. This is the person who had been practicing outside of a school doing private evaluations.
No. She clarified that all her evaluations, she's like, so you have these agencies that hire a certified school psychologist.
Right.
And then the school psychologist is assigned to different schools. So they're providing services in schools. And so we deemed that to be okay. You know, we had a recent clarification, if you remember. In fact,
So they're not working for the school district. They're working for a private agency that contracts with
yes.
the school district.
And so the supervisor is also outside of the district. So I think that's where you're going with, yeah. right, Ms. Galvin?
That's correct.
Yeah. So it's a real problematic. First of all, the master, I mean, all of the others, and I agree, you have a school psychologist in the district, the chief psychologist, who's certified by the Department of Ed and providing supervision. And we have accepted that. They generally are at the doctoral level. But this person is outside of the district, even though they have the certification, you know, because, yeah, it is just problematic. I really do think we need a reference. We would be setting real precedent with this, you know.
Yeah, I certainly do not want to to set a precedent of diluting the application process. And I'd prefer that we have a reach out, and if she graduated from U of A, there should be plenty of folks that she could find as a reference there. So I don't think it's placing any onus on her. So
I mean, her problem is she's graduated some time ago. So, but isn't there something that we could tell her regarding that? There's something we interpreted the 3 years, you know, in the last 3 years.
But the rule talks about the most recent 3 year period that she engaged in professional activities. If it wasn't the last 3 years, I think we interpret it as, and the rule provides that it's the most recent 3 year activity.
So she could go to a professor who supervised her practicum, who's licensed.
Yeah.
Correct? Because that would...
Now, she had been in Hawaii practicing at one point. Is that correct?
Yes. And yeah. In Hawaii, because it was an APA site, you know there's at least 2 psychologists on staff.
Right.
And she should have had a secondary supervisor. And they have plenty. I'm very familiar with that site. We send a student there every year. They have plenty of psychologists on staff. And so I think we need to reach out to her, or she needs to find a new supervisor who will supervise her for a short period, who can then do a reference. So, okay. I appreciate the discussion.
Does that require a motion or
No. We'll do the motion at the end of this category. Okay. So the next one is Nicole Leibowitz. She's also a reapplication, graduate from Midwestern, Part 2 reapp. So I didn't have any questions.
No questions.
We also, this whole category is, except for Catherine, I think, all reapps, if I'm not mistaken. Michael Nash Clark, another reapp, Part 1 and 2. The reason why it says Part 1 and 2, they have not passed Part 1. So Part 2 is still outstanding, so it's got both listed. Summer Boyd, same thing. Another reapp, School Psych ID, former Argosy student, reapp. Any questions so far? I'm just kind of going through because they're very similar.
No, they look. I certainly in terms of the hours and the references, they look good.
Yeah, and as I said, these have all been fully reviewed by the board previously. So Summer Boyd, I just talked about her. Andrea Munoz, I'll go ahead and do her. She's also a reapplication for Part 2. But she did submit a request for an accommodation, which we won't discuss in public session. I didn't have any problems with the accommodation request, so we will include that in the motion.
Because it did include a doctor's statement, a physician's statement to that effect. So.
Mm-hmm. And then the last one in this category is Brian Jimenez. From Adler University, and it's also a reapplication Part 1. So this is the month for reapplications.
I guess so.
So in fact, everybody but Dr. Stoll. I move that we submit all of the applicants in this category, with the exception of Dr. Stoll, to the full board for approval to pass either Part 1 or Part 2, or both Part 1 and Part 2. And then request additional information from Dr. Stoll regarding her reference. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. So that completes that category. Would you like to do Peter Hildebrand? That is 3C1.
Yes. took parts one and two, passed both. Looks like everything else is in order, unless I'm missing.
So this is this is an interesting one. You'll see these and Miss. So this person came before the full board. I don't know when, but some time ago, and then they asked for approval to get, you know, for, and then they had to submit their postdoc. So they finished everything now. And Ms. Folks, explain what you do. You reopen it. So we approve the postdoc and the hours.
Basically, once they complete the ECCC, once they pass, they have 36 months in which to reopen their application for the purpose of approval for licensure. And they submit supervised experience verification. Well, they have their supervisor submit the additional 1500 hours. Often we have 500 or so from their internship anyway, but then we update their supervised experience verification, their written training plan. If they need a new NPDB self-query or references, we get those. NPDBs are valid for 6 months. References are valid for 12 months.
Okay, so then we reopen.
What did Hildebrand come before the board about previously?
He had an ECCC only application. We have a rule that allows applicants, when they are in a postdoc, right after graduation, they can start taking the ECCC without having all the supervised experience completed yet. And then they can come back and reopen the application. There's no additional fee or anything. And then it moves forward as if it were an ECCC and licensure application or a waiver application, so to speak.
So because we didn't have the postdoc earlier when we approved. So similar to that first candidate that we reviewed today, Diana Chedis, she'll probably come back before the board when she completes all of her requirements. Is that correct, Ms. Folks?
Correct. Yeah. If she chooses licensure in Arizona, yes.
Yeah. So we only approve them for one thing. So no problem, but I just wanted to make sure you understood this particular section of applications. So I'm using this as teaching moments too, Dr.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
I need those.
Let's go. Do you want to make the motion?
Mm-hmm. I move that we accept the hours for the postdoctoral supervision and that it move to the full board for approval for licensure.
Second, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Motion approved. We are done with that category. We move to the next one, licensure by waiver. Now, licensure by waiver are those applicants who have passed the ECCC, but they're not licensed at the independent level. And they have different categories. So the first one is Megan Thomas. And not licensed at the independent level. She got her degree from the Chicago School of Professional Psychology. Now, interestingly, she was licensed in Illinois. Was she licensed in Arizona? I was trying to figure her out.
Yes, she was previously licensed in Arizona, but she is currently not licensed. One of the questions here is Dr. Thomas had wanted to know if she can be licensed without taking part two, even though she's currently not licensed. This was a question that we felt needed to just come to the committee for discussion. Because we haven't had this circumstance before, where they had a license in the past, but they're not currently licensed. She let her
license expire.
Mm-hmm.
bad idea to do that, but and not in any state.
So, yes, she would have to meet the qualifications as they are in place today.
So she would need to take the part two. Yeah. Okay.
And then that's because her license had expired?
Yes.
Okay.
If she has a current license, or the one thing she can do, she doesn't want to take part two, is reactivate her license in another state. You know, that doesn't require the part two. I think Illinois doesn't. I don't know for sure, but which states. But if she wants to get around that, but she has to be licensed. Otherwise, she has to meet the requirements that are currently in place. So
is the committee issuing a fare for this with that advice?
Well, the category is licensure by waiver, but really the category should have been
ECCC and licensure.
Yeah, it should have been that category. So if she's willing, we can move it to that category. And I didn't see any other problems with her application, except that she has to pass the ECCC part two. Is that correct? So I think just give a confirmation, email confirmation that she's okay. And if that's the case, then we can vote on her on Friday.
So she is currently not licensed in another state?
Yes. She let all her licenses expire. So.
Madam Chair, committee members, I just have a question for Jean about this. Can the committee approve an application that is listed in the agenda in the wrong section, or do we have to move it to the full board and change the category?
No, I would be fine if you wanted to consider her for the ECCC and licensure. I don't think she's on the agenda, whether it's under one category or another.
Yeah.
And it's a recommendation to the board. You also, and the board could consider this too, she may want to withdraw her application and pursue maybe licensure in another state to come back in, but that could always be an option for her.
So, but could she keep it on hold for 6 months because she has, 180 days, and maybe reactivate her license in another state? And then come back with that license.
I don't think there's anything that would prohibit that.
Yeah. So if she didn't want to close it and reopen.
Yeah.
She's got several options.
Yeah. Madam Chair, committee members, there was a change in the rules a couple of years ago. And so she actually has a whole year, 365 days now, when the committee issues a fare letter to respond. It's no longer 240, it's 365.
So
what is a fare letter?
Formal additional information request. So when the committee or the board makes a request for additional information, staff writes a fare letter and sends it to the chair of the committee for approval, and then it gets sent out by email to the applicant.
So here's my recommendation for her. We either move her to the other category if she's agreeable and get that in writing. If she's not, then we would issue a fare letter. So.
And Dr. Stewart, what if a fare letter will toll the time frame for the applicant? It's about 8 months. So that's obviously to the applicant's benefit for them to gather the information to address the deficiency identified in the fare letter.
It's actually now a year. The rule has changed. It says 365 days. So they get a whole year.
Yeah. Okay. So that's great. So we can give her the option.
What category would you move her to?
Just the one where we had all the reapps, you know, that's the category.
Okay.
Yeah. So then that basically says exam and licensure. Okay. So she's met the other requirements. So the next one is Kimberly Wells. She is licensed in California, but it's less than 10 years. Everything looks good for her. She's got her pre-doc verification. Post-doc looks good. I didn't see a problem with her. And then we have Renata Cooper, also applying by waiver. Everything looks good. She's got a pre-doc, post-doc. She's licensed by the Ohio Board. So, in the case of, I think Kimberly Wells, yes, we had her, when she had submitted her post-doc verification, her supervisor made a mistake, and so that was clarified, and she resubmitted it with
the... Is this the one where the dates didn't match?
I don't know which one that was. Her hours were 26 hours. Maybe there was two things in hers. Yes, you're right. There were two problems, and she corrected both of them, and I think it was Kimberly Wells.
Madam Chair, committee members, Dr. Stewart, yes. The initial verification indicated 2021 and 2022, but she graduated in like 2012, I think it was. And right. The internship should have been
right. Okay.
2011 to 2012.
Okay. So that was corrected in this letter. And she also had the hours issues, right? No, maybe it was somebody else. The 26 and 52. So I think that was Renata. So hers was also correct. I don't know. And then Dr. Renata Cooper is also an application by waiver, and all of the information was completed. So.
Now she holds a license in Ohio, right?
Yeah, so Dr. Cooper had another situation. I did not write in my notes, but now that I'm looking at it. She was discontinued from employment, but she says she has no explanation why she was. She did submit evidence that her last evaluation was good, and she provided right before she was terminated. It's an at-will state, and they did not have to give a reason. She's her license in Ohio is in good standing. I mean, so I don't think I have a problem with moving her to the full board. Any concerns? Anyone? Okay. So I'll make a motion that we move Dr. Wells and Dr. Cooper to the full board for approval for licensure by waiver. And we work with Dr. Thomas regarding her application to either issue a fair letter if she wants to keep it open or move her to the previous category. So.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
We did F, and G is our last category, and it's category by universal recognition. And we have three candidates, and I'm just going to go do them all, Dr. Stewart. Dr. Roos, let me see. I think I'm mispronouncing the name. Dr. Reese. Dr. Reese, we have Dr. Hasnather and Dr. James. They're all applying for licensure by universal recognition. They all have doctoral degrees from different programs. They're all licensed. One's licensed in California. Dr. Hasnather is licensed in Springfield, Illinois, I think, or Missouri. I don't know. Springfield College, and Dr. James is licensed in Indiana and Texas. So they meet our rules for licensure by universal recognition. Did you have any questions on that? And they all have Arizona driver's license, which is one of the criteria to verify them.
So if they were moving to Arizona, but did not have residency here yet, they could not be accepted by the universal waiver?
Yeah. They can't show like a rental agreement or they've done their utilities, and we would accept those as proof. You know, we had one person many, many years, a couple of years ago, who was moving to Arizona, and their child had gotten admission into a school in Arizona, and they submitted. And so that was the reason why they were moving. It was a kind of a unique school, like, you know, a military school or something. And so we have a long list of items that we can accept for verification of Arizona residency. And it's not length of time in the state, but kind of coming here and moving to establish residency. I'll make a motion that we approve Dr. Reese, Dr. Hasnather, and Dr. James, and move them to the full board for approval of licensure by universal recognition. Do I hear a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion approved. We are done with this category and we are done with the entire agenda item. We were kind to Dr. Stewart. It was a short item. I like to keep these meetings really short.
I think my head is spinning.
Sorry.
My goodness.
I didn't rush you too much.
No. Efficiency in motion. I love it.
Moving to item number 4, new agenda items for future meetings. Is there anything you'd like us to consider?
We're still in discussion, it seems like, from U of A and other places, in terms of the EPPP2. And I just noticed that, Heidi had sent out, some materials that we do have some training, programs going on now that we did not before. I was kind of apprehensive about if there's no way for people to study for the EPPP2, then why count it? The manufacturer says that if you pass EPPP1, that there's a high likelihood you'll pass 2. And yet on one board meeting, that seemed to not hold to be true.
Well, that's an item for the meeting. This is just an agenda item. Generally, we restrict it to application related, like we don't like a form, the reference, you know, things like that. So that is more appropriate for talking to Heidi and the board chair, not myself. We just restrict our agenda items to, I know there's some connection, but that is more board items. So I don't think it's appropriate for this committee. Okay. Ours is more almost on the process angle. We don't like how this is working. Maybe we need a new form. We need to revise something. So, and
Dr. Stewart, I'd be happy to stay after the meeting. I've got a little bit of time. I have a 9 o'clock, but we could chat about the thoughts that are you're formulating. I'd be happy to stay for a few.
That'd be great. I like that.
Okay. Thank you, everyone. Do I hear a motion to adjourn this meeting? Oh, sorry. Move second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Motion approved. We are adjourned. Thank you all, and we see you.